What better person could I have to bring to the good listeners of WTSB than Tom Joynham? Well, Tom has many accolades. He's one of the great broadcasters, one of the early pioneers in talk show hosting. But a lot of folks don't know that Tom Joynham is also a member of the North Carolina Broadcasters Hall of Fame, as well as George Beasley and people like that. So let me just tell you, he is as outstanding as you'd want somebody to be. We have one of the most fascinating broadcasters in America right now, bar none. And I bring to you the inimitable Tom Joynham.
Well, congratulations are in order for John B. Wells. John is heard on WTBS, on WTSB. And he has a national program on Tuesday through Friday. The Bride is a Beauty. And John B. is definitely marrying above his grade, just as I did. Also, tomorrow, Carl Lamb will celebrate his 90th birthday and some 70 years of service to the radio listeners of North Carolina. Carl is still going strong, and I enjoy our discussions on his programs. We all wish Carl a happy birthday. Now, his anti-Trump movement continues its assault upon American values. It has become an irrational argument. There is no way that Donald Trump is the monster they portray him to be. Liberal intolerance has morphed into rabid hate with no basis in fact. Some Democrats said last week that Donald Trump was the worst president in American history. The man had been in office for about 7 weeks. That ignorant statement demonstrates the deep hate for the Trump agenda, the very agenda that average, ordinary Americans voted Trump into office to complete. Now, how does this liberal hate and intolerance help our country? Democrats are scouring the landscape looking for any way to undermine the Trump presidency. They object, and they slow down each action the president takes. It has reached the stage of lunacy. Consider that from the first day, Democrats have been stalling Trump cabinet nominees. They say that they want to make sure those nominees are fully vetted. But the nominees are all American citizens, none of whom has offered any violence to our country. At the same time they're stalling, the Democrats are attacking Trump for a temporary halt on immigration to make sure that refugees from 7 Mideast countries that the Obama administration labeled as potential dangers to America are fully vetted. Now, who needs the most vetting? Refugees from Syria or a cabinet nominee who has served in the Senate for decades? Think about that one. Can you not see the hypocrisy in that and the danger to our homeland? Nobody has suggested a ban on all Muslims or a ban on all refugees, and yet the liberal Democrats and the mainstream media put out fake stories about it to mislead the American people. They spread the lie that there was chaos in the White House when the president had less than 2 weeks in office. How much chaos can you have in 2 weeks? They spread the lie that Trump had removed a bust of Martin Luther King Jr. from the Oval Office. They did that to stir up black Americans. They put out a false story about Trump planning to use the National Guard to round up illegal aliens to inflame the Latino community. All lies designed to undermine the Trump presidency. Remember this: if we allow America to go backwards for the next 4 years, because Democrats want to throw roadblocks in front of Trump, there is no way this country will ever recover. And by the way, what would be so wrong about using the Guard to catch people who are entering this country illegally, breaking our laws, many of whom are living on the backs of our taxpayers? Now, I remember a high school football game I was in, and our team was down 42-7. And one of my teammates came to the huddle and said, "There is no way we can win, so let's just hurt somebody." That, my friends, is the stance of today's Democratic Party. They lost the election, and they know they cannot win, and so they want to hurt as many people as possible to get to Trump. Again, tell me how that's good for the country. Jorge Ramos is a Mexican journalist with Univision, who the liberal networks feature often. Ramos said last week that illegal aliens steal the identities of Americans just to get them a better life. Think about that. It's okay to enter our country illegally and steal your identity to get themselves a better life. What does that do to law-abiding Americans whose identity has been stolen? It certainly does not give them a better life. Perhaps the greatest provocateur is Elizabeth Warren, who literally foams at the mouth when attacking Donald Trump. She is so far to the left that the party is in danger of imploding if she and Bernie Sanders continue to try to lead it over the cliff. What do you know about Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren? What I will tell you today should alarm and astound you if you are a rational person, Democrat or Republican, who cares about our country. And I credit research today to the Daily Wire, Fox News, and the Fiscal Times, among others. Elizabeth Warren is a far, far left radical who is trying to position herself to be the Democratic Party's nominee for president in 2020. Her appeal is to the far left base of the party, and it is, frankly, tearing the party apart. If the Democratic Party allows this irrational woman to control them, they are destined to lose even more seats in the House and the Senate. Warren advanced her career by falsely claiming that she had Native American heritage in order to get a high-paying teaching assignment at Harvard. No liberal spoke up to call her on that lie, and the New England Historical Genealogy Society stated that there is no evidence to back up Warren's claims. She has met with DeRay McKesson, the Black Lives Matter activist, who has advanced his career by giving false narratives about blacks killed by police. McKesson's career is replete with nastiness. He has helped organize riots and protests in Ferguson, Missouri, and in Baltimore, Maryland, that resulted in almost half of the 500 businesses in Ferguson having property damage or lost revenue. He has spoken up for killers of the police, including romanticizing the death of Michael Brown, who tried to kill Officer Darren Wilson in Ferguson. Last September, Elizabeth Warren pandered to the Black Lives Matter movement by saying this, quote, "None of us can ignore what is happening in this country. Not when our black friends, family, and neighbors literally fear dying in the streets. It comes to us to once again affirm that black lives matter, that black citizens matter, that black families matter," end quote. What Warren did not say was that blacks dying in the streets are overwhelmingly dying there at the hands of other blacks. What she did was her effort to put together a coalition of voters from the black community, from the illegal immigrant community, from the Latin community, the gay community, and crackpot radicals on the left who despise America. Nobody is arguing that black lives don't matter. What Warren and black activists have to realize is that black lives do not matter more than other lives. In Chicago, this year alone, and remember, we're talking about January and not quite all of February, 100 blacks have been slain in Chicago. That's not by rogue policemen. They're killing each other. Elizabeth Warren has a nastiness of her own. She recently said this about fellow Senator Jeff Sessions when he was confirmed as Attorney General, quote, "You better believe that every senator who voted to put Jeff Sessions' radical hatred into the Justice Department will hear from us. If it makes the tiniest attempt to bring his racism, sexism, and bigotry into the Justice Department, he will hear from us, end quote. Warren had no facts to base her lies about Sessions on, but that has never stopped her from lying before. She stood on the Senate floor and tried to read a 30-year-old letter that Coretta Scott King wrote questioning Jeff Sessions, who was then the Attorney General of Alabama. Warren knew full well that what Coretta King was talking about was when Jeff Sessions investigated charges of voter fraud in Perry County, Alabama. It was a request to investigate it from the black community in Perry, Alabama. I began my radio career in Perry, Alabama, in Marion, Alabama. That's the home of Coretta Scott King. The letter from Coretta Scott King had to do with an investigation that Jeff Sessions undertook as the Attorney General of Alabama. What Elizabeth Warren did not say was that one black group in Perry County called for an investigation of voter fraud by another black group there. Fraud was found, and Ms. King had people who were involved in that fraud. How is Jeff Sessions a racist for doing his job as Attorney General at the request of a black group? Warren knew that, just as I do, but she did her highly personal dog and pony show attacks on Sessions anyway. The lunatics that endorse Elizabeth Warren applaud her every deceitful move. Listen to these things you need to know about Elizabeth Warren. Trump has called her Pocahontas, and others have called her Faux-Cahontas, because in one of the most bizarre, dragged-out lies of any politician, Warren checked the Native American box on her applications to the University of Pennsylvania and Harvard for a high-paying part-time teaching assignment. There is no proof whatsoever, and she's offered none, to substantiate Warren's claim that she is part Delaware and part Cherokee. But it gets better. This woman, clearly reveling in delusion, contributed to a cookbook called Pow Wow Chow and signed it Elizabeth Warren Cherokee. What happened to the Delaware part? Warren is an extremist when it comes to abortion and Planned Parenthood. She does not favor any restrictions on abortion, even for babies that are capable of feeling the pain of abortion. Even after devastating videos emerged showing bins of baby parts and Planned Parenthood employees cautiously, or rather callously, haggling over how much to charge for those baby parts, Warren fully backed that abortion mill. She ripped Republicans and continued to utter the lie that the videos were heavily edited, even after their release came out in full. She opposes any Supreme Court nominee who is against abortion, and she endorses public abortion funding. Elizabeth Warren, the leftist hero of the working class, is filthy rich. She was elected to the Senate in 2012 and is worth between $3.7 and $10 million. That does not include her three-story Victorian home in Cambridge, Massachusetts, that's assessed at $1.9 million. She is ranked as the 76th wealthiest politician out of 541 senators and representatives. She is definitely in that top percent, the very people she attacks for their wealth. Warren hates banks, dating back to when she was 12 years old, and a bank tried to foreclose on a loan that her father would not pay. Warren's father was fired from his sales job and could not keep a job once hired. To level the playing field, Warren wants higher taxes and even more regulations, not just on banks. The Obama administration, which Warren endorsed wholeheartedly, issued a record-setting amount of new rules and regulations. Nearly 79,000 new pages of regulations last year alone. Warren's daughter, Amelia Warren Tyagi, is the founder and chairwoman of Demos, a progressive, George Soros-funded New York City think tank that has actively supported Warren for years and whose stated aim is rethinking American capitalism. Demos sued to force the state of Massachusetts to send voter registration forms to 500,000 people who were getting financial support from the state, an effort that cost the Massachusetts taxpayers $276,000. Clearly, a strategy to help Warren remain in office. Benjamin Barber, a former advisor to Gaddafi, Al Gaddafi, the son of the late Libyan dictator Muammar Gaddafi, was listed as a senior part of Demos as late as May 2012. In the aftermath of that news, Gaddafi quickly left, and Demos changed its mission statement on its internet homepage. Its original statement, which no longer exists on their website, read in part, quote, "Most fundamentally, a sustainable, just, and democratic future requires rethinking American capitalism as it exists today as a system of political economy. If we are going to care for people and the planet, large-scale changes are needed in how Americans consume and live, how the United States structures economic activities and measures progress, and how we engage in the global economy." Elizabeth Warren accepted more than $100,000 in legal fees to help suppress personal injury lawsuits against her client, Travelers Insurance, which was alleged to have misled the public about the dangers of asbestos. Warren worked as a consultant for Travelers in the 2009 Supreme Court case, Travelers versus Bailey, in which Travelers won immunity from all lawsuits related to its bankruptcy of former client Johns Manville Corporation, an asbestos manufacturer. Travelers knew about the dangers of John Mansville's product for decades. The records show that. Travelers won the case, which effectively shielded that big insurance company from any and all future lawsuits by asbestos victims. Where was all that care and concern for the victims suffering then and now because of asbestos? Warren showed no concern for the middle class that she purports to represent. Her eyes were only on money, according to a 2006 statement by Democratic Senator Edward Kennedy, whose former Senate seat Warren now holds. The real crisis which confronts us is not an asbestos litigation case. It is an asbestos-induced disease crisis. Asbestos is the most lethal substance ever widely used in the marketplace. Ted Kennedy went on to say that all too often, the tragedy these seriously ill workers and their families are enduring becomes lost in a complex debate about the economic impact of asbestos litigation. "We should not allow that to happen," he said. "The litigation did not create these costs. Exposure to asbestos created them." Still, Elizabeth Warren chose to work for the large corporation and against the poor and middle-class victims of asbestos exposure that she proclaims to champion. Amid accusations that Warren exaggerated, to say the least, was her claims of her American Indian heritage. Warren's hocus-pocus to secure the two jobs pretending to be an Indian reminds me of another well-meaning government action in broadcasting. Forgetting that poor individuals like myself in the early years didn't have the money necessary to own a radio station, the Federal Communications Commission, or FCC, knuckled under when race hustlers proposed that they award those claiming to be poor, black, or female a leg up on the acquisition of radio stations. Henceforth, anybody claiming minority status would be given special tax credit treatment. If a radio station buyer was black or female and owned no other radio stations, they would receive a percentage of credits at bidding time, and it was a large percentage. That meant that if two people, black versus white, were after the same radio station, the black applicant was given priority. As with all well-meaning government programs, this one was quickly scammed. Greedy whites put a minority out front as the proposed owner to gain the advantage. A few blacks acquired stations using their minority status, and still fewer of them actually operated that station. Instead, they sold them for profit. I'll give you three examples. A radio frequency in South Carolina was auctioned by the FCC, and since I already own stations, my daughter applied for the license using her status as a woman. She won the auction. When I sold WQOK-FM in Raleigh in the 1980s, it was the dominant station programming to the urban community. Several buyers came forward, but they were either white people or white people who already owned a station. They did not qualify for the tax certificate given to minorities. I sold that station to a black man, Reagan Henry, who already owned stations, but could provide me with a tax credit given to him by the government. The white buyers did not have a tax certificate to give, and so Reagan got the station for $50,000 less than the closest white buyer. The third incident I'll point out played out in Florida, where a new station was to be auctioned in Palm Coast, Florida, just out of Daytona. At that time, I had sold all of my radio stations, and now I qualified for a tax certificate because I had no station ownership. I was able to get that station from the FCC because my tax certificate was there, even though I had owned 56 other stations over the years. That tax certificate scam was finally stopped. But even today, the commission is being asked to reinstate that minority certificate program with the claim that fewer minorities own radio stations today. Mostly, that's because they sold the ones that they did own when the market for them was red hot. It's not just blacks asking for the return of the tax certificate program, but whites who relish the opportunity to use minority buyers to eventually acquire those stations themselves. This tax certificate program was a well-meaning disaster. Liberals devise all of these ways to empower minorities and women, only to see the system greatly abused. It's not unlike food stamps, whereby the recipient is given favorable treatment, only to sell the stamps for 50 cents or less on the dollar. It all costs the taxpayers, and inevitably, when the fertilizer hits the fan, the liberals say, oops, nothing to see here, let's just move along. Our government is in debt at $20 trillion and borrowing more every day to support waste and fraud. It makes liberals feel good about themselves when they can spend our money. Elizabeth Warren graduated in 1976 from Rutgers School of Law in Newark, New Jersey, the lowest-ranked law school from which any Harvard Law School professor has ever graduated. During her early career, Warren taught at Rutgers, the University of Houston, and the University of Texas School of Law, while also working as a research associate. During this entire time, she produced only two full-length academic works. After identifying herself as a Native American, Warren began teaching at the University of Pennsylvania School of Law in 1987, the same year that her second husband, current Harvard Law School professor Bruce Mann, also joined the faculty there. Warren divorced her first husband and the father of her two children, Houston engineer Jim Warren, in 1978. She then married Bruce Mann, a visiting professor of law at the Houston Law Center, where she was teaching in 1980. Elizabeth Warren has emerged as the attack dog for the Democratic Party against Donald Trump. But as I will show you today, she is a hypocrite of the highest order. She attacked Trump for saying a decade ago that the housing crisis, that if there is a bubble burst, as they call it, you can make a lot of money. She attacked him for that. Trump spoke the truth. In times of debt crisis, those who have available cash make a lot of money. I can remember my own father telling me about the land selling for 10 cents an acre back during the Great Depression. When I asked him why our family didn't buy up some of that land, my father said, we didn't have a dime. Despite her disingenuous political rhetoric, the notion of buying low and selling high is a practice that has helped Elizabeth Warren become a very wealthy woman. In 2012, the Boston Herald reported that Warren, remember, she's one of the one percenters who is worth an estimated $8,750,000, rapidly bought and sold homes herself. She loaned money at high interest rates to her own relatives and purchased foreclosed properties at bargain prices. In some instances, she made triple-digit percentage gains from the houses that she flipped and sold. Each of those foreclosed houses that Elizabeth Warren bought low and sold high came at the expense of some poor family that had lost that home. Furthermore, by attacking Trump, Warren is defending Hillary Clinton, whose husband helped cause the housing crisis by rewriting the Community Reinvestment Act. That act resulted in people buying homes who could not afford to keep them, and the housing bubble did burst. But not before Elizabeth Warren added to her wealth on the backs of those families who lost their homes. How dare she attack Trump? Even though she has outlined a plan for debt-free college, Warren took a salary of $430,000 from Harvard, driving up the costs of a college education. The next time Warren is relaxing in her $1.9 million Victorian home in Cambridge, Massachusetts, she should do some self-reflection. This former Republican-turned-liberal icon has spent her political career laying the foundation for the Occupy Wall Street crowd, even though she is part of the economic class they vilify. Elizabeth Warren is in that top 1% of taxpayers. She's based her career on lies and gotten rich by taking advantage of the same opportunities she now wants to deny to millions of Americans. Wells Fargo came under the tongue-lashing of Elizabeth Warren over their practices. Warren had to get up on her high horse when the cameras were rolling to score her political talking points. Although the individuals who actually bilked the customers out of money were fired, Warren piled on, accusing Wells Fargo's CEO of not firing a single senior executive and blaming it all on low-level employees. Where were those words? When Barack Obama blamed low-level IRS employees in Cincinnati for the IRS targeting, harassing, and intimidation of conservative and Tea Party groups. During the campaign for president, Elizabeth Warren jumped on Trump for calling Hillary Clinton a nasty woman during the last debate. Warren said this, quote, "What kind of man tries to hurt someone else or get others to hurt someone else? A nasty little bully and a man with a dark and ugly soul. Apparently in the befuddled mind," end quote. Apparently in the befuddled mind of Elizabeth Warren, calling Hillary Clinton a nasty woman is beyond the pale. But calling Trump a nasty bully with a dark and ugly side is just totally fine. Elizabeth Warren has never known an abortion that she could not approve. Slaughtering a fully formed baby at any time, up until moments before its birth, is not nasty to Elizabeth Warren. In her 2003 book, The Two Income Trap, which Warren co-wrote with her daughter Amelia Tyagi, Warren endorsed a school voucher system to free children from the tyranny of educrats assigning them to schools based on where their parents can afford to live. Senate Democrats were loaded for bear when President Trump's nominee for Education Secretary, Betsy DeVos, appeared before Congress. DeVos had spent her entire life advocating for children and for parental choice in education to ensure opportunity for all, regardless of race, class, or gender, or zip code. Such dedication is irrelevant to the defenders of our country's dysfunctional public school system. DeVos came under withering fire from the hypocritical Elizabeth Warren over DeVos's desire for school vouchers. Suddenly, Elizabeth Warren was against school vouchers, the same vouchers that she had advocated before the DeVos hearing. Warren had the gall to charge that Betsy DeVos's support for vouchers and privately run schools was disqualifying. How blatantly hypocritical is that? Elizabeth Warren made a couple of appearances for Hillary Clinton in 2016 in the presidential race, but she did not endorse Clinton. That is so that she cannot be accused of supporting Clinton in a 2020 race. But first, Warren has to face re-election to the Senate seat she now holds, and the polls show her in trouble with voters in Massachusetts. Politics is a nasty business. Elizabeth Warren is a nasty woman. They go together like hand and glove. Carl?
Well, thank you. Thank you for putting sunlight where darkness has been, and I certainly appreciate that. That was fascinating to me. I didn't know all those things, but I heard every word, and I know exactly what you were talking about. Tom, let's talk a little bit more before you say goodbye. I had something in mind here. I had a little notice a little bit ago. President Trump is going to talk to a joint session of Congress tomorrow night. I think this used to be called the State of the Union. Yeah, State of the – why isn't that called the State of the Union tomorrow night?
Well, they have different rules for Donald Trump and for the past. It's the same thing that he's going to do that has been done before and called a State of the Union address. But they have different rules for Trump. I'm telling you, when you say that somebody who's been in office for 6 or 7 weeks is the worst president in United States history, that tells you all you need to know about his critics.
I saw this morning, I'm an avid reader of the Drudge Report, and Drudge had the headline this morning, if I read it correctly, and I'm not sure I do. I'm so busy and do so many things, I don't have all the time I need to read, and I don't research things as strongly as you do, and thank goodness we've got you to do that. But it said that Republicans were poised to have the best march in decades, and I saw where Trump got about an 86 approval from CPAC, and yet from the American people, he's not getting that kind of support.
That's according to the mainstream liberal media, Carl. Listen, if you take the national networks and the cable networks like MSNBC and CNN, the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Chicago Tribune, the Los Angeles Times, and you continue to berate this president every single day, you put float little things out there that aren't true. You're supposing what the man may be going to do in the future. How can people not have a low opinion of Donald Trump?
That's right. You know, I'm a veteran of World War Number Two, and Adolf Hitler, I've learned a lot about him in the last month or two I didn't know, but he had a minister of propaganda. Was it Goebbels?
Joseph Goebbels.
And he made this statement, if you tell a lie often enough, people will believe it. So what's happening here is we're being lied to again and again and again and again. And some people who are not very smart are believing it.
Well, if you say it as you said and as Goebbels said it, if you tell it often enough, I mean, people say, you know, I mean, come on, you got a guy in his coveralls, he's trying to work to support his family, and he comes home and he hears this over and over and over again, and he doesn't know, he doesn't have time to do research and things like that. He doesn't know that. And so when he keeps hearing that over and over, it forms that opinion in his mind. And Democrats grabbed on to that early on. They've been doing that for years. Just repeat these things often enough, and people will come to believe it.
I am somewhat convinced that God is protecting our president, Donald Trump. I don't see how. I go back and think, I don't see how he defeated the globalists, the people who were lying, the people who were trying to manipulate the polls, the people who were trying to vote dead people. I don't see how But I knew it must have been the help of God that Trump was elected. So who in the world, even the Democrats, couldn't believe, and they still don't believe, that Donald Trump fairly and squarely defeated the globalists, the leftists, the mainstream leftists. And I'm a Democrat, but I'm a conservative Democrat. I know there are millions of people in the Democratic Party that are not leftists, and they would like to see the party get back like it used to be. Now, I think you are a libertarian. Am I right about that?
No, I'm an independent. I reserve my fire for whoever's in the shooting range. I was a Democrat when I grew up. My family was a Democrat. They were hardworking people that had always been Democrats. Once I began to get out into the world and understand what was going on around me, I chose to be a Republican instead of a Democrat. But in 1995, so that's been a while ago, I said, you know, I can't support Republicans or Democrats as a party. I'm going to be an independent. I'm going to choose who I want to support based on whatever I'm able to research and find out about them, rather than, hey, I'm a Democrat, or hey, I'm a Republican, and so I've got to go with the party. This is not a party. This is life. This is serious. And those that insist on having a party are going to be bitterly disappointed in the end.
You're absolutely right.
I will say this, though, Carl. You mentioned, you hit on something that has been in my mind for quite a while. When you mention God, you have so many people that you turn their back and snicker. But I honestly believe that we were given one last chance in this country to reverse the far swing to the left Donald Trump represented. Donald Trump obviously has his own flaws and faults. Everybody does. But God, I believe, chose to stop Hillary Clinton and those on the in the Democrat Party who were dragging it so far to the left. And that's going to be a problem for Democrats going forward. Those that are trying to drag it so far to the left, and that includes Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. Even Hillary Clinton wasn't that far left. She had to be drugged there by Bernie Sanders. But I believe God did give us one more chance to clean this up. Not that Donald Trump can do it by himself. He's got to lay out the parameters, but we've got to do it ourselves. And I honestly believe that. And it just bothers me so much to see somebody in a couple of weeks or 7 weeks, 2 months, saying that this man is the worst president in American history. Good Lord, we just came off of 8 years of Barack Obama. And you can't make a statement like that and be taken seriously. So I believe the man is trying his best to turn this country around. It's not Donald Trump per se that these people hate as much as they hate the agenda. They hate what the average American voter voted for Donald Trump to go to Washington to do. And he got to Washington, he began doing it immediately, and it's driving these people crazy. It's his agenda, not so much Trump. You know, that tape that came out that hurt him, and it really did hurt him, from 12 years ago now, NBC had that tape of Trump saying some things he obviously should not have said. They had that tape for 11 years, and they held it in their little vault until Donald Trump appeared to be gaining ground. Had he not been gaining ground, they'd have never released it. But they did release it just at the proper time to try to undermine this man. And that ought to tell the public something. If NBC is a legitimate network, if they have any honor at all, and you have that tape sitting there for 11 years, And this man is a main player in real estate in the United States. Why didn't that story come out?
Good question. Another question. If you were Donald Trump, President Donald Trump, and you were invited to the White House correspondents' meeting, he has decided not to go, would you go, or would you decide like Donald Trump not to go? What would be your decision?
My decision would be to send him a little note and say, no comprende. I would not go. And there's a reason you don't go. You don't march into the lion's den. Yeah, I mean, why would somebody want to go and put themselves on display? You say, well, other presidents have gone. Yes, and there were jokes made and that kind of thing, but they were made in good fun and good spirit. These things that are being said about Donald Trump are not in good fun, and they're not in good spirit. They are vindictive. And so should he have gone to this dinner? Absolutely not. You know, these people at that dinner are, many of them are billionaires. Others are millionaires. You know how much money they raise? They're supposed to be raising for charity. You know how much money they raise every year? $100,000. Now, you and I both know $100,000 is serious money, but it's not serious money to a billionaire. I mean, it's pocket change. I would, if I were Trump, I would do exactly what he did. But now I would say, you know, this is a worthy charity. And so I'm going to personally give $100,000 to the charity, but I refuse to come in and let people try to humiliate me. Boy, would that put them on defense big time.
You know, there's a lot of people. Abraham Lincoln believed that before a person should have the right to vote, they needed to own property. Now, he had that idea for a reason. I think some people, and they've quit teaching the Constitution in the schoolhouse, and you know, I feel that's by design. Do you feel it's by design?
Of course it's by design. And now many of our universities are dropping American history, even for history majors.
Didn't know that, but I did know that to some extent, but there's two words I think to people, and there's millennials and then there's millennium. Now, millennium is 1,000 years, and millennials are 18 to 29 voters, so it took me a while to kind of figure that out, but I think that's something I'm leaving now. So a lot of people that listen to you and me can figure out when they talk about millennials. They're talking about people 18 to 29, I believe. When they're talking about the millennium, that's 1,000 years. So I just wanted to throw that out there. I had to come to grips with that before I could actually discern some of the news being reported.
Well, Carl, I was on with John Book last night, John Butler Book, who appears on WTSB every now and then. I was on with him. He's out of Orlando, Florida. We had a great program. It was on based on George Soros. I was giving the information that I gave WTSB listeners a week or so ago about George Soros. And at the end of that, I said to John, you know, George Soros is not going to go to hell immediately. They're going to put him in a little ante room there, a little holding room. Why? Because the other people in hell deserve better than that.
Well, I thank you for a broadcast today that enlightens us, informs us. I hope people will take things seriously. And I think when they listen to you and a little bit to me, that we're going to do our very best to provide them with the absolute truth, nothing but the truth, so help us God.
Absolutely. Put aside party. Embrace your country. God bless America.